Brunson, Sabonis, two-man game inside. Domas, dominant, dynamite inside on that one.
Not afraid, and he got some dog in him.
And the steal, they can tie it with a three. Murray, yes! A Murray miracle in the desert!
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse Podcast. My name is Brendan Nunes. Got my guy, as always, co-host Hunter Patterson. Writes for The Athletic. What's going on, man? You doing good?
All is well. I'm a little disappointed that my Heat are in the hole that they're in, but we talk about that often enough. So, yeah.
Just can't be surprised, right?
Living with that. Definitely not surprised. Not surprised. But not feeling it nonetheless, though.
That is fair enough. I am feeling it. And did just start doing a Celtics podcast with an old buddy of mine, so I'm excited to be covering this postseason again. But Sacramento Kings are definitely into their offseason. We've had a little bit of time where, I don't know about you, but for me, it definitely does feel like offseason, at least on Sacramento's perspective. Yeah. And in some of the exit interviews that we really dove into in the last episode, one of the things Monty McNair mentioned in his exit interview, and he's mentioned plenty of times before, it's just the way the NBA works, is there's three ways to improve in an offseason. And that's free agency, that's the draft, and that's trades. And the Kings have like capital or ways to maneuver and make impactful moves in all three of those. And I think that we want to spend an episode sort of on each and some of the optionality that Sacramento has. Cause another big takeaway from that was Monty talking about the flexibility that they have. And that's part of this. And today we were going to start with free agency. Just to give a brief, you know, overlook of what the Kings are really working with. They have their MLE and their biannual exception this offseason. The MLE is the non-tax players MLE because they're an above the cap team, but they are still about like 20 to 25 mil, I think roughly in there under the first apron for the tax. So they'll have their MLE, which is 4 years, 55.3 million is what it's projected at. And their biannual exception, which is given to teams that are exactly where Sacramento's at, above the cap, but below the first apron threshold. But you can't use the biannual exception in back-to-back years. Like the Kings used it 2 years ago, didn't have it available to them last year. Now they have it available again. That one's 2 years, $9.6 million. So again, MLE, 4 years, 55.3. Biannual, 2 years, $9.6 million. Really quick, what some teams did with their MLE last year, just to get an idea, right? And last year's was 4 years, 53 million compared to the 55 this year, and you can split it up, which is what a lot of teams end up doing.
I was wondering that
you can split it up. A lot of teams will even like leave a minimum amount left that they could use later in the year. Like the Lakers last year went and got Gabe Vincent from Miami, 10.5 mil of their 12.9 starting salary, and they saved that leftover amount, which they used later in the year for Spencer Dinwiddie to give him 1.6 mil. Right. Other examples, Cleveland, George Niang, 8.8 million. And then they used the remaining 1.5 for Craig Porter Jr., who I believe was a later round draft pick for him. Dallas split it up a lot. Dante Exum got 3 mil. Seth Curry got 4. AJ Lawson, who I had no clue was still in the league or got signed last year, 1 million. Reggie Jackson. Now, Denver was working with their taxpayer MLE. So it was only 5 million that they could give to Reggie Jackson. What else we got in here? Memphis split it up. Bismack Biyombo, 5 million, Vince Williams, 2.2, and Gigi Jackson got 2 million. After they signed him, Minnesota went and got Shake Milton for 5 and Troy Brown Jr. for 4. The Knicks, Dante DiVincenzo fit into that 11.7 million. He's probably pretty easily, I think maybe Gabe Vincent, if he was healthy, would be in this conversation, but right. I think pretty easily the best player on this list. And obviously he took his game to another level. Philadelphia saved it, used it on Kyle Lowry and also on a second round pick in Ricky Council. It's kind of the range of moves we're talking about. Now the Kings had their room exception last year, which it's complicated on all of these, but that's essentially a team that's under the cap can use it after they've used their cap space. And that's where the Kings were last year. and they split theirs up where Sasha Vezenkov got 6.3. They saved a remaining amount to do something with in the future. That's what they ended up giving to Keon Ellis. So a lot of teams do end up splitting this up. There's the big fish like Dante DiVincenzo, Gabe Vincent, last offseason, Niang sort of fell into that. But then there's these smaller ones where you go get Dante Exum and Seth Curry, or you go and get, you know, Biombo, Vince Williams, and you give money to your draft pick and G Jackson, or Shake Milton and Troy Brown. So that's kind of the range of, just to give you an idea of how this has previously been used before and the range of sort of players that we're talking about. And I think the other thing that should lay out a little bit here before I throw it to you is sort of just what Sacramento's offseason is looking like when it comes to their roster. Now, their free agents are obviously Malik Monk, which I think he'll get his own episode at some point of.
Yeah, sure.
I think that gets more contextualized as the season goes on with some of these teams that are interested in him, how Philly ends, how Orlando ends and things like that. But he's an unrestricted free agent, which we've talked about before. The max the Kings can offer is 4 years, $78 million. Kessler Edwards is going into restricted free agency. Alex Len and JaVale McGee are free agents. And then two ways, Jordan Ford and Jalen Slauson are free agents as well. So the depth chart, let's say all these guys leave, right? Hypothetically. Right. The depth chart of what you're working with. Fox and Davion Mitchell at the one. Kevin Huerter, Keon Ellis, Colby Jones at the two. And obviously you can move these positions a little bit. Harrison Barnes, Chris Duarte, Keegan Murray, Trey Lyles, Sasha Vezenkov, and then Domantas Sabonis. So tell me if you disagree. Now, I know that I kind of walked, I went through that pretty quick. But again, Lennon McGee gone, Malik gone, Kessler gone.
Yeah.
Leaves you with no backup center. That seems like something you'd have to figure out. And then I look to wing and forward depth as the other way I'd look to split it up. And then I also at some point want to get to how your decisions or thought process on dealing with this money would change if we knew Malik were to walk. Mm-hmm. But I guess we can start with if Malik stays, right? And then we'll get to if he walks towards the end. But are you with me that you kind of feel like the guards are set if it was if Monk stayed, where Fox, Mitchell, Monk, Kevin, Keon, Colby, you could throw Chris Duarte in that group, I guess, to give you some minutes at the two if you needed. But is that where you would look to as well for this sort of free agency? Or do you think that there is other approaches?
I'd feel pretty comfortable with that guard group just because the way Davion closed the season out, I feel really comfortable with him and De'Aaron being like the two ones. Kind of throw Keon in there a little bit, even though he's more of like a two combo guard. And I do want to give Kevin another chance just because he was dealing with a lot of things being asked of him last season. Obviously had the season in an injury. And if he has a summer of healing and rehabbing, and then the thing he said during exit interviews that also really stuck with me was the fact that he was, instead of like enhancing his game overall, he was working on the things he expected to be asked of him. And once those things got shut off, he wasn't really excelling in other areas. So you give Kevin an offseason of expanding his game wholly and not just in specific areas. You give him some time to rest up and rehab. I think he could maybe be closer to who he was in that first season with the Kings. And obviously I like what they have going on with Keon. I think I'm expecting Colby to take a little bit of a step next season too. I think he should have plenty of growth this offseason. I'm expecting him to play in summer league and get even more confidence. So I would be more focused on things we were talking about leading up to this: backup center, wing depth, and in wing, I'm kind of thinking a little bit more like 4-2. But yeah, I mean, and we're gonna get into this assuming Malik does stay. So we'll break it down.
As I'm muted.
I was about to say, I hope that's not mine.
Yeah, that was on me. Do you think we should start with backup centers or wings and forwards? Maybe
backup center.
Okay.
In there a little bit.
Let me start with a general question of like, I'm curious. There's some names that pop out to me. Like, we'll just start with like Dario Saric, for example, okay. Right? A guy that can play the four next to Domas, but can also play the five.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, I was like, you know, this interests me, but I feel like they can't be a tweener. You know what I mean? Because I feel like that already exists with Trey, where right. It's like, if you want to go small, then you can do that, you know? But if there's like Naz Reid, I know the Kings really like Naz Reid last offseason. Like, that's a guy that like is a center, but also can play four. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I'm curious, like, your take on that. And I guess like Christian Wood could fall into the same sort of thing. How do you feel about a guy that can play with Domas and behind him, chasing that? Or would you rather, and I guess it's all contextualized, we'll get into it more with each specific name, but would you rather go for a guy that's just straight up a backup big?
I'm more of a straight backup big kind of guy, just because you mentioned Trey. Sasha can slot in there a little bit too. He's not going to play really much five unless they go extremely small. And I would like someone who can contrast Domas a little bit once Domas is off the floor and possibly be a rim protector. Someone who just gives the opposing team's second unit a different look than you would get with Domas. So I prefer someone who potentially could play with him in like a two big lineup. We saw it a couple times when Alex and Domas shared the floor a little bit. But I'm more against the tweener. I'm looking for more of just a straight up backup big.
Yeah, I think I'm feeling the same way. And there still is Alex Len and JaVale McGee. You know, the Kings don't have their bird rights, which I believe, and this is, you know, I think this is accurate. Maybe it's irresponsible, maybe saying, but I think that means that they would have to use either their MLE, part of their MLE, or biannual to sign them. I believe, I could be a little off on that, but I think part of this conversation needs to also be just, are these guys better than Alex Len?
Right.
Like, I are you with me that like JaVale, there's no real point bringing him back?
Yeah, I mean, in theory, last offseason, I was like, okay, you get a vet, you get someone who's been in high pressure situations, but JaVale, more than anything, was kind of just a vibe guy. The fans loved him a lot, but he wasn't bringing a ton on the floor. So,
yeah, fair enough. I'm at the same point as you. So I'm going to go through some names and stop me when you want to talk about one, and feel free to do that at any point. But the one other thing I'll add real quick is that I think that this backup center position obviously is not a spot where you should spend your entire MLE. You know what I mean? So yeah. Sure, there's going to be some maybe more intriguing options than the guys that I will end up highlighting. But I think that also just how much do you want to spend on this spot factors in. Like a guy like Jonas Valanciunas, free agent, good relationship with Domantas Sabonis. Probably, I mean, this guy's also made $15 million this year. He's probably making more than the 12.9 it's projected, the MLE is projected to start at next year. But even chasing a guy like that financially to me doesn't make sense. And I feel like Rashawn Holmes is in here. I think he's cheaper for sure, but I feel like Nick Claxton and Isaiah Hartenstein sort of fall into the same category. I love those guys. I think both would be tremendous help to the Kings. I think Claxton is just kind of too good to be a backup center.
Same.
And Hartenstein is getting close to that.
Yeah, you know? Depending on how well he keeps playing in this series against the Sixers, he could potentially play his way into a starting role for a lesser team. And I don't know how willing he would be to come play off the bench in a situation behind Domas. So same with Nick Claxton. I think he's a starter. So that would be tough, but ideal for the Kings, obviously, if you were able to get those guys.
There's also Mo Wagner playing pretty well for the Magic right now. He does have an $8 million team option next year. So interesting to see the direction they decide to go with that. Daniel Theis.
I do, real quick on Mo, I think he's pretty versatile. He doesn't shoot the three ball great, but I think he's able to space the floor in certain situations. I love the tenacity he has. He just seems like he's one of those guys who you may hate to play against, but you would love to have on your team because he's like, he's damn near willing to die out there to win games. So I just love the tenacity he plays with.
I am pro Mo Wagner for sure. Yeah. Price considered, you know, it might change based on what the market looks like. I mean, he's playing 15 minutes a night in this series, which is not nothing. Back playing the role he would in Sacramento, pretty much. Obviously, schematically a little differently, but when it comes to minutes and just where you sit in the depth chart, again, making $8 million this year, $8 million team option next year. So TBD on his availability. Daniel Theis, kind of interesting to me, probably a little bit past his prime definitely past his prime, but maybe just straight up on the other side, you know, one of those that I wouldn't mind as a option at the backup center, but if he's your only one, you're kind of in a tough spot. And it might be the case where they have to get two of these guys, you know? Obi Toppin's going into restricted free agency. I think he's just straight up making more than $13 million.
Same.
I think.
He may be able to be persuaded into that depending on what his role is, but I think he's again someone who probably has outplayed that threshold financially.
I think the same. It's also restricted free agency, and I think that you have to love somebody to commit your MLE to them. You know what I mean? Because you lock it up for a while. The other team's going to take until the very deadline that they have to either match or not match your deal just to mess with you, because that's what every team does. And in the meantime, all these other teams that also have the exact same money that they're working with to go improve their teams. There's a lot of teams that are sitting with MLEs as their main free agency option, get to make their pitches to these other guys. And obviously you can still go, you know, if this doesn't work, this RFA offer, then we're going to go in your direction. It just doesn't hit the same. Right. So I think you have to be very picky with restricted free agency. He's probably not even worth chasing. Mason Plumlee. I really like Mason Plumlee. He could pass.
You said you would pass on Mason Plumlee?
I said he can pass.
Oh yes, he can pass. I like his game too. He's just, for him to be as tall as he is, he seems pretty versatile. He's able to do different things. I like the fact that late in his career, he was willing enough to start shooting free throws left-handed to try to improve his free throw percentage.
About the free throws, yeah.
And I think he's another person who could be a really good rim protector. So I would love him off the bench. I think when the Clippers came to play, we were at one point talking about how good he could be for the Kings. So I would be all in favor of that. And the price point seems right. I don't think he's commanding too much money. So
yeah, he made $5 million last year. I think that's about right. It might even be a little less. It hasn't exactly panned out great for him since he's gone to the Clippers. He really interests me. And, you know, it's interesting to discuss like what you look for in this position. But again, I think that there's a lot of options out there that it's hard to just say like backup center, I want this, you know, some guys are a little more playmaking and you can continue your DHO like Plumlee. Some guys are a little more defensive that we've talked about as well. Keep going down the line. Andre Drummond made $3.3 million last year. This guy's like turned himself into a really good backup center.
Yes.
And him and Domas might average like 30 boards a game.
Bro, it would be actually ridiculous. I think he was like kind of the perfect fit in my mind. He's never averaged fewer than 6 boards in the time he did. He was only getting almost 13 minutes last season in Chicago. So he's he can basically get a double-double in his sleep, depending on how well the chippies are going in for him, if he's not smoking layups and different things like that. But he can
he averaged 8.5 and a 9 in 17 minutes today. It's 17 minutes this year.
Bro, it's really impressive. He does a lot with the little as far as minutes go. So I think Andre Drummond would be perfect. I think he had some maturity issues early on in his career because he was in the league so young. But at this point, he's more or less a vet. So I think he would be someone who would come in and be really impactful for the Kings off the bench. And he also kind of has like a, not as much as Mo, but he has a little bit of an edge to his game. So I like that too.
For sure. Got some shit to him and the Kings could definitely.
Hell yeah.
A theme this year was it's a team of nice guys. And right. That's fine. That's also where, you know, it's another way of I guess, saying soft at times.
Yeah, right? I mean, you could get punked with a team full of nice guys, which right. you don't want. So
you just need one. You need like one to hype up everybody else, but it's a very delicate balance because you get yeah. the wrong one, it throws everything off. It's a delicate balance. I like Plumlee better than Drummond, but I do really like Drummond.
And to that point, I think Plumlee would be better with his decision-making in DHOs and kind of the offense that the Kings run. So I could see him being more of a seamless fit, although Drummond obviously is a better rebounder. But, I mean, I would give Plumlee the edge just because of that, too.
I am with you. DeAndre Jordan. This doesn't feel worth it to me. Kind of JaVale all over again.
Yeah, very much third string. I think he had a few games when Jokic was out where he looked similar to like a very much less athletic version of Lob City him. But I don't think that would be a consistent thing. So, by the way, was that Associus?
It was actually, y'all put me on. You and Tristy put me on. You know, the Celtics beat the Heat, and I was like, in honor of y'all. It is.
That's crazy.
It's the exact same flavor and everything, actually. Tristy Rodriguez, NBC, definitely put us on.
That's hilarious.
That's hella funny. I forgot to mention that to you before. Let's keep going down this list. Christian Wood. Let me put a couple in here. Mm-hmm. Guys that I think were previously people were high on. Christian Wood, Thomas Bryant, Mo Bamba, Jackson Hayes. Any of those pique your interest?
I mean, Christian Wood possibly, but I think we saw him flame out a little bit with the Lakers.
Definitely.
He had he had injury issues. And he just wasn't really as consistent as I thought he may be in that role. And there wasn't a ton of pressure on him. So I thought that would have made things easier for him. But I would like it, but not necessarily love it at all. And like is even kind of like, I don't know if that's the best word.
I could talk myself into it.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely want to feel okay about who the third guy is.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, Alex being the third one, or Alex and another big, mm-hmm. might be my preference here. I actually hadn't really thought about that. But we'll go more into some of these other ones, and then I think we can do like a top three sort of each if you're down.
Yeah.
I didn't realize every guy I mentioned was like a Laker in the last 2 years, by the way. Christian Wood, Thomas Bryant, Mo Bamba, Jackson Hayes, all these just guys that did not figure it out.
I forgot about Mo's LA stint.
Not really much going on. I don't know. Those guys are fine to me. I could talk myself into Thomas Bryant, I think, kind of easiest out of the group, or maybe even Jackson Hayes. All the off-court stuff's gross, obviously. But if Malik's back, talk about a lob threat. JaVale did that well. Yeah. You know, Jackson Hayes definitely fits that. I do really like, I'm going to throw these three to you at the same time. I really like all of these, actually, price considered. Drew Eubanks, who I think is pretty good for a backup center. Xavier Tillman was drafted by the Kings, actually, and traded on draft night. And Cody Zeller. You know Cody Zeller a little bit in Miami. I think all three of these dudes are just all reliable backup centers, you know?
Yeah, that's another one where I'm not super head over heels for any of them, but I do think there's like a baseline that they would give you that's not terrible. And I think in the right kind of role, as obviously not having much pressure on them to do the things that a starter would obviously have to do, your limited minutes, maybe 15-ish a night, I think they could be pretty solid. I think Drew Eubanks would probably be my favorite of the bunch. Same. Just because he's on the younger side in that trio.
Yeah, 27. And,
So I think it's funny, even Ant was, he may have been trolling after they swept the Suns, but he was like, Eubanks didn't get in the game. So I think that's
hella funny.
Yeah, he's someone who I think could be pretty good in that backup role.
I forget who was the Suns' backup center last year? It was Lawndale. That's right. I was getting it mixed up in my head. There was a game last year where Lawndale, I was going to say locked up, but that's probably over the top, played really well against Domas. Yeah. And then the next day, we're like out there while they're warming up, and the assistant coach is giving Domas a hard time. Like, he locks him up on one play. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm like Jock Lawndale out here. It only came into my mind because I was thinking it was Drew Eubanks, but it was Lawndale.
That definitely sounds like Jay Triano.
It was not Triano, but it does sound like Triano for sure. I think, well, let me see, go through this list again and make sure there's nobody else I'm missing. If there's anybody else that stands out to you,
okay,
let me know. But kind of trying to go through the list. I mean, this is where you're going to get pretty deep in this, and I'm trying to not go too in the weeds like Luka Garza, Usman Garuba. These guys aren't doing it. Yeah. I mean, I wrote down most of them. I think like Bismack Biyombo. I mean, don't really do anything for me. Same with Goga Bitadze. I guess he started to do okay in Orlando. I'm not going to lie. There was a time last year where many people were saying he was the worst player in the league.
That's crazy. He, I want to say he was with the Pacers before the.
He was.
The Magic, yeah. And he had a few games where I was like, okay, this dude could be pretty decent in limited minutes, but that faded pretty fast.
Yeah, I think I'm out on that one. I mean, I think that's pretty much it, man. Like, I think maybe let's go a top three. And I kind of think that I'm rolling. I kind of think that keeping Len in this might be the move rather than getting two of these guys. But there, it also could be a two way, you know, it could be Usman Garuba, like I mentioned, or something, or Jeremiah Robinson Earl, they do have a club option, but like something like that, you know, as the third guy. Right. But I think if I went 1, 2, 3, I think I'm going Plumlee, Eubanks, Drummond.
I'm with that. I think the only thing I may switch would be to move Drummond into two, but it still would be Eubanks second. I mean, third. Only because the two other people I was really considering in Nick Claxton and Hartenstein have probably, like we said, outplayed that role and should probably be getting cashed out by someone more than the Kings could offer. Otherwise, those two I would love, but definitely Plumlee is my one. I'd probably say Drummond is my two, and then Eubanks as my three.
Yeah, definitely on the same page, but they have good options. You know, I think that, not to be rude, most guys we talked about are better than JaVale McGee, for example. And again, MLE starts at 12.9, and you can split that up. Same with the biannual. It is 9.6 over 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go through, but last year, like Cleveland used 2.4 on Ty Jerome. The Lakers used 4.5 on Taurean Prince. The Raptors used 4.5 on Jalen McDaniels. You know, interesting sort of range of guys for the Kings to use that money to. Some of these backup bigs do seem a little more like biannual or a small portion of the MLE, ideally.
Right.
Now, wing and forward depth. There's interesting guys. Yeah, I guess I'm just going to start to list off some names. Again, 12.9 mil is where the MLE starts. And this is starting, like, I have it ordered based on who made the most money last year. But Doug McDermott was making 13.8 mil. I am assuming that's not going to be the case next year. Good for Dougie McBuckets. Yeah. But yeah. I think one of the interesting aspects of McDermott to me, even though he's a little bit older, let me see exactly where he's at with that. 32, not too bad. And not really playing for Indiana in this postseason series, but has a pre-built chemistry that was pretty good with Domantas Sabonis coming off of DHO specifically. And he shares the same agent with Kevin Huerter, and Kevin Huerter's talked about how when he first got traded to Sac, that McDermott was somebody that he talked to a lot about playing with Sabonis. McDermott was telling him, you're going to love it. It's going to free things up for you. So a little bit of some pre-existing relationships there, at least a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it'd have to be pretty cheap if I'm really interested in Doug McDermott at this point, right? And these other two probably go the same. Robert Covington and Nick Batum, two guys that, like, I don't know. Ideally, you're searching for your Otto Porter here, right? When the Warriors won that, and like Mike talked about the importance of Gary Payton and Otto Porter, right? Like those are the type of guys you're looking for here. But do any of McDermott, Covington, Batum do anything for you? I don't mean to trigger you with Batum after what he did.
I definitely just got flashbacks to the playing game. And I'm just like, God.
And he has not done shit since, by the way. I checked again.
He's someone who, like, he has his spurts, but I wouldn't really trust him to be consistent for an entire season. Maybe once you hit the postseason, he gives you a couple games.
I can see him going overseas, too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at that. But Rocco, I'm not loving that at all. I think he could be a potential solid 3-and-D kind of guy off the bench. But again, I'm not really too high on him. So, yeah, that's a bunch where I'm not super loving it. But they could be solid in limited minutes.
Yeah, as a, like, Kessler Edwards replacement, you know. Right. And right. I guess real quick, by the way, on free agency, and since we're on wing forward depth, like, how do you feel about Kessler and, like, going into his restricted? How much do you prioritize wanting to bring him back?
Not much, to be honest.
Yeah.
I have love for him. He was in the WCC. He was at Pepperdine when I was at LMU. So he is someone who seems to have made strides and grew in Mike's system, but I wouldn't prioritize him a ton.
Yeah, definitely not prioritize. It's probably not great wording by me, but, you know, depending on what's offered, I wouldn't mind him as an option here.
Now, he seems reliable, at least.
He does. Like, you know what you're getting, you know, even if you know that comes with some shortcomings, but you know what you're getting. As we go down the list a little bit, maybe I'm going to just throw out these restricteds real quick because they have their own complication to them. Patrick Williams, probably making too much, right? Mm-hmm. He's weird as hell, but yeah. Isaac Okoro? Sorry, go ahead.
I was just about to say about Patrick Williams. He was a Florida State guy.
Yeah,
I remember there were like comparisons to Kawhi, which seemed so unrealistic. But he was pretty solid this year when he wasn't injured. So, but I do think he's like a fringe starter. So
yeah, it's probably too much. Isaac Okoro. Now, like, any longtime listeners will know that when it was Bryant and I, we obsessed over Isaac Okoro at the time of the draft. It is not gone the way that I expected. My little Iguodala light, you know?
Okay.
But I'm still interested. It's just his offseason and just, like, going into restricted. That seems so unclear to me on, like, what that's even going to look like.
I think Mike would love him.
Same.
He would probably be an ideal Mike kind of guy who plays extremely hard. He's working his ass off defensively. He could hit shots here and there, but I wouldn't trust him a ton to be a real 3-and-D guy. But he seems like he won't be ultra expensive.
I wonder. Yeah, I mean, like, so to go through these other ones, right? Like Sadiq Bey, who has there's been a lot of links to the Kings in the past, whether that be in the draft or the year that Detroit was one pick behind them and everybody's saying just trade one pick back if you want to get Keegan and get Sadiq Bey, right? Or he's played really well during the time he got moved to Atlanta, 25. And the other one I really like, I think it's Simone. I hope I got that right. Fontecchio, though.
Yeah.
I think he's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And I think that it wasn't Utah. He was on Utah. Who traded for him?
He's with the Pistons now, I believe.
That's right. Thank you. I think he's really, really good, too. He's already 28, so he's kind of already, I mean, still could get better, obviously, but sort of already is what he is. And I think he's a really good 3-and-D player. You know, shot 40. Holy shit. He shot. Oh, well, this is with Detroit specifically, but on the year, dude, he shot 40.1% on 5 a game.
Yeah, he was balling once he got to Detroit. I mean, last month of the season, he averaged almost 16. Like you said, he was shooting about 43 in March from 3. And he definitely seems like he hustles pretty consistently defensively. Also got to like backtrack a little bit. I said Isaac, I wouldn't really trust him to be a three-point threat, but 39% from three on three attempts this season.
That's what he ended at?
Yeah, 39. And every year he's like upped his three-point percentage, so I got to give him some love there. But Fontecchio, I think he's another guy who's like pretty gritty. He has that like that edge we talk about with like Mo and Drummond a little bit. So I think he would be a great fit.
I think I would throw 10 mil at him. I'm not going to lie. I like, yeah, I think I would happily throw a majority of it to Fontecchio and then still try to save like a minimum deal for, you know, or like 2 mil to go get Eubanks or Tillman or Zeller or something like we talked about. Mm-hmm. I really, really like Fontecchio and Sadiq Bey, but are they getting more than the 12.9? Like Bay, I think, is more likely than Fontecchio. And I think also the complicated situation, again, restricted free agency. And both of those guys specifically were traded for. Like, yeah. Meaning that their team probably values them. Now, maybe mm-hmm. what they saw after trading for them has changed their perspective. But more often than not, if a guy trades for a guy that's about to go into restricted, it's going to be pretty difficult to go get that guy, I feel like.
Yeah, I think Sadiq, I love his game. He's pretty inconsistent. He'll have nights where he's just not effective. But for the most part, I liked him when he was in Detroit. I liked him when he had an increased role when DeAndre Hunter was hurt in Atlanta. So I think he'd be a really good fit, too. I think Simone, I might trust him a little bit more defensively, though. And overall, I really, since we got to talking about him, I really like Simone.
That 3-point percentage shook me. So did Okoro's, not going to lie. I want to ask you about a guy in Miami, Caleb Martin. $6.8 million player option next year, first of all. This year, very different than last year for him. I think after last season, it was like, oh, well, he's got to decline that option. You know, he's going to go get more.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's still the case?
I think he could. If I were him, I would possibly decline it. I think you can, at bare minimum, you might be able to find 7-8 from a team that's less competitive, if that's what you want to get into.
If you were the Kings, would you do that?
7 or 8?
Yeah.
I would kind of wait and see like what the market has and like if a Simone would be interested or who I could get before him. But if he were like a last option and there were $7 or $8 million available, I would probably try to throw that at him, just because, again, he's, I think most people who play in Spo's system would translate to Mike's. I think you don't have to tell Caleb to play defense. He's pretty vocal. He's it would take time for him to gain the respect of the locker room like it would in any team, but he seems to be a guy who holds his teammates accountable, and he could be kind of like a stretch three, stretch four kind of guy.
He interests me for sure. I have a little bit of like Dylan Brooks questions about him in the aspect of like, I really liked what Dylan Brooks last offseason would have provided defensively, but offensively, it's like, can he play within the flow of this offense and maintain that like 0.5 offense of making decisions in 0.5 seconds and the ball and player movement and like, I do think that Caleb's gotten more used to that for sure in Miami, but I still wonder about that a little bit with him. Some of the other, I mean, there's a good amount of names here. Like Royce O'Neal was making 9 mil last year. You know, he seems like a guy that could just straight up get more. I know your coworker Shams was just talking about how it doesn't seem like Phoenix is necessarily going to blow it up, that they could run it back, sort of potentially looking at to reevaluate their coaching situation and sort of things like that. And they just traded for him. So maybe it's just a shoe and they're going to bring him back. If not, I'm a big Royce O'Neal guy.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Anderson and Derek Jones Jr., Najee Marshall. All of those also fit the Caleb Martin for me, you know, of I wonder about the offense, but I would love the defense. And you probably just need some of those. But maybe, I don't know, maybe that's not the way they approach it. Like, what do you think of those range of guys? Of I guess Martin falls in there too, but Kyle Anderson, Derek Jones Jr., Najee Marshall, kind of three different tiers of the same sort of player.
I would love Najee. I think Kings fans definitely saw the value he brings to being almost like, I don't like using this word, but like an irritant. He seems to easily get under the skin of other players. He plays his ass off again. He's like another hard-nosed guy who's playing hard at all times. I trust him to be consistent-ish offensively. But I just like he's again, like one of those guys who plays hard. He doesn't care. Like, if I'm offending you, oh, great. Like, I was trying to do that anyway. So I like that about him a lot. Derrick Jones Jr., I think he's insanely athletic. And if he can stay healthy, which he played, I want to say about 70 games this season. Let's see. Yeah, 76 this season. So if he can kind of maintain that health, I think he'd be a great fit. And I'm not sure about how he would be in movement, though. A lot of his threes seem to be like kickouts from Luka. Luka and Kyrie drawing a lot of attention, and then you spray it to him. But yeah, I love his potential defensively. He's like the ideal wing defender in the league. So I would be really high on him. And then Slo-Mo, I think his game is just funny because it's like, as a fan and someone who just watches basketball, you question how he can be so effective, but he finds ways to make it happen. And defensively, I think he could be what the Kings may need him to be, but I'm probably the lowest on Slo-Mo. I wouldn't be too high on him.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think the interesting aspect for a guy like Derrick Jones Jr., Najee Marshall, Caleb Martin fits in it as well, is, yeah, I question the shooting a little bit to different extents with these guys, obviously, but that being a good cutter is really valuable in Sacramento's offense too. Yeah. And some of those guys, I mean, obviously Derrick Jones Jr. really, really could provide that. A fast break with De'Aaron,
oh my God,
Malik, and Derrick Jones Jr.
That would
be so fire.
Yeah.
That would be a great time to watch. I think now I'm at the point where I'm just going to list a bunch of guys and tell me when to stop, right?
Let's do it.
Chetty Osman, Jayshon Tate, Torian Prince, Jay Crowder, Josh Richardson, Kelly Oubre.
I'd love Kelly.
Yeah?
Yeah, I would definitely love Kelly. But then again, it's like he's somewhat similar offensively. I think about Trey a little bit, and it's like, I don't know if you need both of them. So that would be the only drawback. Chetty, I also think, would be a great like shooter in movement and defending a little bit, but I could see him being someone who would fit into the offensive scheme.
Yeah, honestly, every name I mentioned, if it was a cheap ass deal, I would not mind, you know, between those. I really kind of do like Josh Richardson. I've just weirdly always really liked Josh Richardson, and okay. He never seems to actually do what I think he's going to do when he goes to a team. So maybe I need to let it go at some point, but he interests me a little bit. Oubre, I want to say, played on an AAU team with De'Aaron in high school.
Okay.
I believe that they're both Texas guys. So, you know, some sort of baseline there, whatever that means, doesn't mean that De'Aaron necessarily likes him or anything. I have no clue. Mm-hmm. Yuta Watanabe, a guy I've really liked before, hasn't done all too much recently. O'Shea Brissett, big fan of the vlogging behind the scenes of the Celtics.
Hell of a content creator,
and I would appreciate that aspect, but if that's what we're complimenting, it probably says something. Kenyon Martin Jr.?
I still think he could be really good in the right role. He just hasn't found like the perfect situation for him, which is tough.
And you know, maybe this is the sort of like I could see it with the transition, the mm-hmm. cutting. He plays really hard, but that's one of those where I put him in wing forward, and I guess that's true. I still would prefer a little more size, though. I think. And then last two I have written down are T.J. Warren and Marcus Morris. I think both guys that are just like, you know, if it was a minimum sort of thing and you were just trying to add some depth, really. yeah, I mean, is there any other, as I'll keep scrolling down to the bottom here and looking from there on up, but is there any other guys that really stood out to you?
One that I think probably is going to be too expensive, but Gary Trent Jr., I think he would be a great fit. I think he kind of like got beside himself a little bit. There was not a ton to play for in Toronto after Pascal got traded and OG got traded. And they knew that they weren't really competing for much of anything. But I love Gary Trent's game. I think you might have to tell him not to chuck every single shot that he sees, but he would be good, I think, in the DHO heavy, movement heavy offense. But again, I think he's probably going to be a little too expensive. Year before this year, so like last season, not the season that just ended, he had career highs, like I want to say 17 points a game. But also Javonte Green, who wasn't really in the league until the Bulls had a bunch of injuries, and he averaged like 12-ish through nine games.
That's a Celtic right there. I like me some Javonte Green.
There you go. He was 37% from three. He plays his ass off, really like just a hard playing guy, but he could potentially be someone, maybe. Those two are the only ones.
I like him. I'm with you. I think Gary Trent's probably too much. He was making 17.3 mil last year. And you know, it's always interesting to try to figure out how much of is like, oh, is this setting the market or is this a guy getting overpaid or underpaid? Which makes all these conversations a little complicated, and the Malik stuff too, obviously. If we, what would you give as your top three for this wing forward depth?
As far as realistically being able to pay them, right?
Yeah. And like, you know, in your mind, how much they would cost, like price considered.
Another one before we get into that, possibly Malik Beasley. But again, I think he's played pretty well for the Bucks this year. It might be too much. I am leaning toward Derrick Jones Jr., Najee Marshall, and at that three spot, I'm a little torn. I know I would say Derrick is my one, Najee would be my two. And after the three, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I really want to put Fonseca at one. But...
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah, hold on now. Let me rearrange.
It's also the restricted thing, though.
That's the thing. I was like looking at mainly guys who are unrestricted, so that probably was my drawback with him. But all things considered, if he was interested in SAC and the Pistons were willing to let him go, I feel like the Pistons have a lot of shit to figure out. So
Right. Who
knows what they end up doing. But he would definitely be in my top three. I would probably bump him up to maybe two, fringe one over Derek.
Yeah. I really wonder how much he's going to get paid. Because I stopped myself from saying it, but like, he might be better than Harrison Barnes already. You know, like, jeez. Maybe I'm tripping, but like, I really think he's good. I really think he's good is my point. I think he's like a plug and play guy in most places. So I'm curious to see what that looks like. And now restricted is complicated, but I guess I'll put him three because of the restricted. Straight fit, he might be one. And I'm not going to include Royce O'Neal because that seems, I think, unrealistic.
Yeah.
If it's not, I'd put him one. But we'll go... this is so weird, man. All of these are kind of whatever to me. I'd probably go Derrick Jones Jr. one as well. And we know the Kings have liked him in the past. I think it was last offseason or whenever he had hit free agency most recently, the Kings were one of the four or five teams they were interested in him and seemed to have some sort of consideration on his side as well. So we know there's at least some form of interest there. We've seen them, you know, show that the previous interests come back around with Dante DiVincenzo. And there's another one that's not coming into my mind. But I guess Derrick Jones Jr. And then I guess I'm going to put Fontecchio second. And then Najee Marshall. I really like Fontecchio, and, you know, Isaac Okoro is probably a little honorable mention, I guess, for me too, as somebody that loves Okoro, but also seems unrealistic to get him to stick around. And Sadiq Bey falls into the same. Like, I think Royce O'Neal, Sadiq Bey, probably Fontecchio falls into this too, but like, and Patrick Williams, for example, Okoro, those are ones that I'm probably like, you know, not mentioning because I'm assuming that it's going to be too much, but you never know. Yeah. And another aspect here, before we get to potential Malik Monk replacements, which you kind of hinted at some of them, is that things could change. Like Davion Mitchell could be included in a trade. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, they need a backup point guard.
Yeah.
You know, unless they feel like Colby and Keon got that covered. But these trades could very quickly change your needs. And then all of a sudden we're talking about, you know, DeAnthony Melton, for example, or something. But I think I laid that out. I'm going Derek Jones Jr., Fontecchio, Najee Marshall. And you went Derek Jones Jr., Najee Marshall.
And Fontecchio would be my third.
And Fontecchio.
Yeah, so we got the same three.
Got you. Now, the complicated one, right? Or actually, let's do an ideal duo between the two.
Okay.
You know, if you could get, well, I guess we answer it with our top three, right? Yeah. Like, your ideal pairing would be Mason Plumlee, Derrick Jones Jr.
Damn, now I think that would be a hell of an offseason.
Actually,
it seems like Mason Plumlee is like someone who every year I'm like, oh man, he's getting up there in age, like he's getting older, but he's still athletic, he's still able to affect the game the same way. So I wouldn't think too much about age with Plumlee, and Derrick Jones Jr. is still relatively young.
Yeah, it's not a bad combo at all. Even if like you paid a lot for Fontecchio and ended up with Cody Zeller, for example, or Xavier Tillman and like Alex Len sitting there, like I don't think it's a bad outcome. But like, point being, if say they came away with like our dream outcome, right? Mason Plumlee, Derrick Jones Jr., which is not even really a dream. Like, I don't think that's super unrealistic when it comes to just the finances of it. Now, obviously, they're competing with every other team in the league, including these teams these guys are on, but that helps you a lot.
That feels like an upgrade.
That feels like a big upgrade. And, you know, like mentioned with these other ones, like the Lakers could have really benefited from Gabe Vincent this year. I think that that was a good way to spend the money, even if he didn't end up participating much. Cleveland got better with their depth by adding Niang, you know, Dallas, Dante Exum, Seth Curry, Reggie Jackson in Denver, like DiVincenzo in New York. Like, teams do find ways to get better using this limited salary marker. But if Malik Monk were to walk, a guy that we're not sure if he's going to stick around because we're not sure that 20 million is enough or close to 20 million. Pretty impossible, really, to replace his production.
Right.
Right. There's nobody that's coming in and just doing what Malik Monk did.
Can't replace that entirely.
But if he's gone, I think it changes how you need to maneuver this.
Same.
So I guess in my mind, and let me know if you're the same, it just makes you more like really playmaking, but then also I don't mind going and getting a guard. Like, if Malik walked, do you look at a guard, or do you feel like, you know, Fox, Davion, Kevin, Keon, Kobe, like they got it set, or do you feel like you'd need another?
I need a guard.
You probably
would,
do, right?
I would definitely. Yeah. I mean, and earlier we were talking about the, like, me feeling comfortable with Davion, Malik, or excuse me, Davion, Keon, Fox, and then you have like the Colby and Kevin. I would feel comfortable with that, but if considering Malik is gone, I would need some type of offensive like punch off the bench.
Right, which obviously would then mess with your opportunity to go spend that money on other positions, which is, again, why the Malik thing is really the most important thing for the Kings this offseason. Mm-hmm. Well, definitely up there. So yeah, these names are where we get a little funky, right?
Yeah.
Bruce Brown, $22.5 million team option, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
I would opt in a heartbeat if I were him.
Well, it's a team option though.
Oh, it's a team option. You're right. Okay. I wouldn't, if I'm on their end, I'm like, I don't know.
But it's like Toronto's kind of in a weird spot because like I had seen reporting his previous, or like people talking about previously of like, well, maybe they'd want to keep it as a matching salary in a potential deal. And you want to have that sort of flexibility. They're not in a spot where they're really using the money this offseason anyways. Yeah. But at the same time, they could move on from Gary Trent Jr. And move on from Bruce Brown and all of a sudden make money. And then they're competing for Malik Monk, for example. And I know that they very much like Malik Monk. They wanted him in the in any Pascal deal, for example. Mm-hmm. I think there's a world where, I don't know, it's a tough one because it's one of those like Indiana came in, said, here's 245. No other team was going to get close to that. He's yeah. out here at the parade talking about, I'm going to be back in Denver. And then he's like, how much?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So the number feels misleading, but he's still probably more than 12. No?
I think so. Just because it was like, I would say it was kind of like a whirlwind of a season for him. Started with the Pacers, played decent. Then you get traded to a team that, again, is not really competitive at all. So I think teams would have in mind that this was like a pretty turbulent season for him and then still remember who he was when he was with the Nuggets.
I think the same. He's a guy that I would love on the Kings. It's probably just too much. Gary Trent Jr., you mentioned, he does feel like one of the closer like replacements, I guess, of this guy can still really, really help you when it comes to creating offensively. Like, I don't feel as good as I do with Malik, obviously. I think there's a big difference in playmaking, but this guy can score and he could play defense. Like you're saying, if there's anything, you might need to rein him down a little bit. Yeah. But 17.3 last year, like, I think he'd cost too much, but also feels like one of those where maybe some like legit contender is, you know, that where their full MLE is a little more appealing to him, for example, than maybe what Sacramento's is. You know, it feels like one of those guys where if the Kings were to get him, it'd probably have to be a scenario where they're offering more than other people rather than like the same deal, unless there's a more opportunity because all of a sudden Malik is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But feels like an unlikely one, at least to me. And you mentioned Malik Beasley, too. I want to say he led the NBA in three-point percentage for if he didn't end the year, it was a large majority of the year. Yeah, Grayson Allen might have got up there.
I think Grayson ended with it. But for a while, it was Malik.
I don't know how to feel about him, though. Like,
I don't trust him.
Like, I don't either. He's Terrence Davis to me.
Yeah, he has really good spurts. And then he has spurts where it's just like, bro, you can't make shit right now. So
right.
I also question like how, like his buy-in, I guess. He seems to be just up and down with all things, his game, like his mentality, approach to the game. So I wouldn't love him, but the potential there is obviously really high for the way he shoots and the way he could fit offensively.
It's interesting to see what his market might be because, like, this last year he was making 15 mil. I don't think he's making anywhere close to 15 mil in this next contract. Now, like, if we're talking about the biannual, you know, 2 for just under 10, 9.6, like, that'd be a great get if Malik were to walk, you know, to just bolster your depth a little bit there. Now, what do you think of? I really, really like both these players. I don't know how to feel about them for the Kings. Now, if Davion were included in a deal, maybe I'd feel differently, but can they play with Fox? Monte Morris, Timberwolves just traded for him. I'd be shocked if he went anywhere, to be honest. I think he's one of the best backup point guards in the league. And Tyus Jones, going into restricted free agency, he was making 14.5 mil. That was his market when he hit free agency. I don't know that it's necessarily gotten that much higher. Like, I think that he's a really good player. He's probably out of the price range. And that's the theme with a lot of these guys because attempting to replace Malik is probably going to take more than this when it comes down to it. I don't know. Are both of those just straight up probably unrealistic, Monte Morris and Tyus?
I think Monte is definitely going to be staying put because I want to say Tim Connelly was who brought him to brought him to the Nuggets, and now Tim is with the Timberwolves, and he traded for him. So I think there's like a lot of comfortability there. I think he'll probably be staying put. But Tyus, if I were him, I would definitely want to be out of the hellhole low-key that was Washington. So, and I mean, he's another person who, like, his assist to turnover ratio is amazing. It seems like he can get a ton of assists without turning the ball over.
Which That's the Jones bro stats.
There you go. Yeah. And it's like that would be highly coveted, I think, by this Kings team that had issues with turning the ball over throughout the past season. But yeah, I don't know how much he would want to come off the bench, but I think he would be a great fit off the bench if anything were to happen to Davion and he were to be traded. Yeah, there's another name I'm waiting for you to bring up that I think, and eventually you will, for this Malik replacement.
I got one other written here. So
okay, let's see.
DeAnthony Melton.
That wasn't him. But I like DeAnthony's game.
Yeah, to go on Melton really quick then. 8.7 mil last year. He's a guy that's interesting to me because he can play next to Fox and as his backup, you know, which I think does have some value. There was a joke on King's Twitter previously about somebody saying this guy was better than De'Aaron years ago. And
wow,
I still can't scrap that.
Who was that guy?
I will fill you in after.
That's crazy.
I don't know. He interests me, but I just don't know that it's, if Malik were to walk, I would get allocating the assets there, but I don't know. I like Melton. It interests me. I just don't know that it, I'd probably rather have a, I don't know, would I rather have Derek Jones Jr. than DeAnthony Melton? Probably for this Kings team. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what it kind of comes down to for me is that, like, price considered, say he's flirting with the same sort of range, that 8 mil. Biannual's cool. I'd be down for biannual, you know, or I guess a portion of the MLE, but price considered, I don't know. I don't know. I'm all over the place with him.
I mean, he, like, a career year, 11 points. That's the most he's ever averaged. 36% from three. He's never averaged fewer than 1.2 steals. So he's committed defensively, but I don't think there's like he would be a really good fit and whatnot, but I don't think he's someone that can like help take the team necessarily to like the next level.
Right. What name you got?
Lonnie Walker, bro.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I do like this.
Yeah. Lonnie Walker. I think he has similar athleticism. He's not nearly the ball handler that Malik is. He's also not the facilitator that Malik is, but he has spurts where he can create his own shot. He can get in a rhythm, potentially have a couple 30-point performances off the bench if he gets rolling. I think Mike would be able to mold him into the defender that he would want him to be. And again, like, you're not getting the ball handling and facilitation that Malik brings, but just pure bucket getter with a lot of athleticism and upside, I would like him.
He's definitely interesting. And that's the type of guy that I feel like they do probably have to like look for, a guy that they feel like could do more, you know?
Yeah.
He definitely interests me. And just scrolling through this list, like, Gary Harris wouldn't be the worst. I'm not a big Gary Harris guy, don't get me wrong. But if Malik were to walk and you had to try to figure out, okay, how do we get a little bit of this offensive spark off the bench? Gary Harris, not bad. You know, I don't think he should have been necessarily he's not starting on great teams. I know he's been starting on Denver, Orlando, and things like that. But he's always been like we need to upgrade this spot for both those teams, really. But, you know, if you lost Malik and needed to find, again, just a little bit of an offensive spark, I don't hate either one of those. Lonnie is definitely interesting. I think ideally you find somebody that you feel like you can unlock a little bit more than what other teams had, right? But tough to find that because other teams are obviously looking to do the same.
Yep.
Alec Burks doesn't really do it for me. I know that Luke Laux was assigned to him when he was in Golden State. They have a good relationship. He had a brief stint in Sacramento before and pulled a Marco Bellinelli where he just completely forgot how to shoot. Only he wears purple, apparently.
Yeah.
He could shoot the hell out the ball, but
he's what I like to call a chucker. He is a shot chucker, bro. Like, he's, there's never been a shot that he hasn't liked. I think that could be helpful in certain situations and then hurtful in others. But I really have a lot of faith in Mike to be able to get guys to be where they need to be mentally and to kind of like hone in on what their role exactly is. So I have faith in Mike to bring things out of players that maybe weren't brought out of them in the past.
So do I, actually, which I think helps a lot in just the evaluation of these guys, you know, and I think it's helpful for Monty to bounce ideas off of Mike and Wes and all these other guys, obviously. And I have a trust in Monty, too. And it's honestly where a lot of my, I guess, optimism comes from for the future of this team, is that, like, I believe in these guys and sort of what they're building. I think it's easy to see their game plan and just the their logic, really. And what I try to do in a lot of situations, even if I don't agree with the logic of a team, if I can see it, then cool, you know, then I can present that. I get where you're, what you're trying to do, even if I don't agree that it's the right thing. King's perspective, actually, I do think that for the most part, how they've gone about it is, in my mind, the right way. But it's also very clear and easy to see their logic. And I have faith in those guys. That makes me feel pretty good about what's going to end up happening here. But like, if Malik walks, they're in a pretty tough spot. A guy I've mentioned before is KCP. There's always, how do you go get your KCP?
Yeah.
He has a $15.1 million player option. He probably just picks that up, but he's 31. There's a chance that he wants to decline and get his, like, quote unquote, last bag, but is, for, say, Kings through full MLE, right? 4 years, 55. Like, if you're KCP, are you really taking 455 with the Kings compared to one more year with 15 with Denver and then figuring it out after? You're probably staying with Denver.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, you gotta, yeah, you got a chance to win, like, prove yourself again. So I wouldn't take that.
Yeah. Markelle Fultz do anything for you?
To be honest with you, bro, no.
I don't think so either. Guys that can't, I mean, not that he can't shoot, but obviously not very good at it. Well, I mean, if anybody straight up cannot, like, physically, you know, he'd been there.
It's sad.
But it is. I loved Mark. Bro, I can't tell you how many times I watched his Washington highlights.
Yeah, he was
when tough. I thought the Celtics were about to pick him. I was like, this dude is nasty, bro.
Yeah.
He's ridiculous.
Clearly, y'all made the right decision, though.
Apparently. It worked out okay, you know? I think that's really all I got, man. I don't even feel great about ranking the Malik replacements, quote unquote, but we could try if you want, maybe like two here. Yeah. I think because they fill that like sort of role, I think I'm going Malik Beasley and then taking your Lonnie Walker.
Okay. I'll go Lonnie. And man, after that, it gets a little murky after that. It's
really tough.
I just, for the sake of us not having the same person, I need to come with somebody other than Malik.
Do you like Gary Harris at all?
Kind of. It's like, doesn't really do a ton for me.
What about Luke Kennard? He's a $14 million team option.
Okay. I mean, obviously he's not like super offensively inclined, but he can shoot the hell out of the ball. So I would love that.
That wouldn't be bad, actually. I think he was playing point guard for a sec with the Clippers, no? For like half a season or something. Yeah.
Yeah,
I skip over his name. He might be too much, but.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I would want to say Gary. Trent is my second, but obviously he's probably going to be too much.
Right.
Man, that's a pretty tough one.
And that's the whole point, right? Is that like, if you go from literally Malik Monk to any of these guys,
it's a drop off regardless.
It is a fat drop off.
Yeah.
And you're in a very tough spot. And really what it comes down to is you're relying more on Kevin. You're relying more on Keon. You're hoping that Colby emerges a little bit. Davion falls into the same. And like, really just the other guys on the team probably already have to really pick up the slack. And Malik moves,
it's really probably trades where you're really looking, trying to replace his, excuse me, his playmaking, I think, primarily. Like the go get a bucket. I think you, some of the guys we mentioned are okay in that aspect, not Malik level. But even that, the go get a bucket or the playmaking, like really finding a way to replace that is probably through a notable trade along with some of these complementary pieces, like we're kind of talking about. You know, if they went and traded for a, let's say Mikhail or Lauri Markkanen or some dream like that, right?
Yes.
And all of a sudden, it's like, okay, I don't feel that bad about, you know, Malik Beasley, for example, or some of these smaller ones being like, okay, well, this guy's going to fill Malik's role, but we got that production from a different spot via trade. And I think that's kind of the spot that they would have to be in here. But in kind of having gone through it, just how do you feel about the opportunity that they have with this MLE, again, 4 years, 55, and this biannual 2.96?
First off, my apologies if you can hear whoever this is that decided it was a great time to start leaf blowing at 5 o'clock.
It happens to me too. Whenever
I don't know what the hell is going on, but I think this exercise was good in me feeling more optimistic about what the Kings can do with the money they have and the options that are available. Because until you really dive into it and you kind of like play out the scenario of a Mason Plumlee being in a DHO heavy offense, you talk about the cutting of a Derrick Jones Jr. and how these guys can potentially fit on this team and upgrade the bench unit that the Kings had last season. It for me, I was a little pessimistic going into it, but in just talking this through and listing different names and how they would fit, I feel much more optimistic about the people Monty and Mike could bring in. And again, this is like what they do for a living. So I think they're really methodical and thought out in how they're planning to go about it this offseason.
The depth was definitely an issue in the postseason for the Kings, albeit only two playing games. And obviously Kevin and Malik were down, obviously plays a part in that. But, you know, making these improvements on the edges really does affect a team. And, you know, say that instead of JaVale McGee, all of a sudden it's Mason Plumlee instead of Kessler Edwards, it's Derrick Jones Jr., you know, or maybe it's Najee Marshall, or instead of Mason Plumlee, maybe it's Andre Drummond or Drew Eubanks. Like, these are all hypothetical, at least expected, I guess I would say, improvements that could notably change your team, you know? And I think that they're in an okay spot with some of these guys. I think that there's also situations where it could go wrong. Like we saw, you know, you can, and I still have to clarify this actually, but Monty said you could trade into the MLE, which I believe means you can take players on and use it as a trade exception. You know, say Chris Duarte last year, say they go and try and get another guy that, like we talked about with Lonnie Walker, for example, a guy you think you can get more out of in your system and that doesn't end up working out, or a Sasha Vezenkov you try to bring from overseas. Last year, OKC used their room exception on a different overseas, I think former MVP as well, Micić, right? That they ended up trading to Charlotte for Gordon Hayward in that deal. But there's certainly ways that you, it's not guaranteed improvement, obviously. There's ways that they go in with, but I don't know. I guess actually I talked about being optimistic about Monty. How do you feel like from your perspective, what's your confidence level in his decisions going into this offseason? And specifically, I guess, let's say free agency.
He seemed pretty intent on improving the roster. So we've seen in the past, he didn't decide to make very many changes last offseason, decided not to do much of anything at the trade deadline. And now he's like, okay, we've tried to give our team time to gel and come together and develop just more cohesiveness. And now we see it's not enough. We see how competitive the West is. We see how everyone around us is getting better. So now it's time for us to make some moves. And he gave, like we talked about after, he gave a ton of politically correct answers and wasn't really forthcoming with too much information. But I do think genuinely that he is ready to make some moves if need be. And I think we've talked about it a little bit in terms of him being kind of like a reactionary person. Like, a trade doesn't go the way another team would hope. And he's like, hey, that didn't work for you, but I have this. And so I think I think moves will definitely be made this offseason. And I feel more confident than I did last offseason that he'll be able to get some things done.
I'm the same. I feel, like I said earlier, pretty optimistic about their just decision-making and sort of thought process. I'm trying to go back and look through at some of the previous free agent signings that specifically this front office has made. And it's taking me half a sec to find this here, but let me make sure to see what sort of signings they've done before. I'm trying to, I can think of Harrison Barnes, obviously recently. The Malik Monk deal was great. Now the Rashawn Holmes one, maybe not so much, but I think that they thought that he was going to get paid more elsewhere, didn't want to just let an asset walk for nothing. And, you know, like some of them are not great going, getting a KZ Okpala, for example, but these are like fringe stuff. If you went and got TJ Martin and it didn't work out, or like you would want Tanabe and it didn't work out, like I don't feel like I can really give them much crap for that. Reasonably, I'm struggling to find these previous transactions, but I feel like previously they've done okay. There are obviously some misses, like we mentioned, Sasha. So far, I do still very much think that should be TBD, at least from my perspective. But Chris Duarte didn't look great. I know that wasn't free agency, so like there are some misses, but I think for the most part that they've done okay, and they have some optionality here. And this is probably of their three options, probably third, I think, in sort of what they're able to do with it. Like we're still going to get into the draft eventually. I still got to brush up on a lot of the potential prospects, but I think sitting at 13, you still should be able to get a better player than any of these guys that we went through. Maybe not any, right? But a majority, at least. And obviously, like everybody says, isn't a good draft, whatever. You never really know. It wasn't a good draft in 2013, and Giannis ends up being in that draft, you know?
Right.
But I think that this is sort of, this is just depth improvement that we're really talking about. And maybe you get lucky and somebody becomes a better starter. Maybe Fontecchio or Royce O'Neal, for example, it comes in and takes HB's spot, you know? Yeah. Maybe, but you'd have to get really lucky and have your equivalent of Dante DiVincenzo last year for the Knicks. Mm-hmm. So I think that improving the depth important, and they'll have some optionality in doing that with some of the guys we mentioned. Again, Mason Plumlee, Drew Eubanks, Andre Drummond, sort of at those centers, wings forward. We mentioned Derek Jones Jr., Najee Marshall, Fontecchio, and Malik replacements, sort of Malik Beasley, Lonnie Walker, and who was the other we mentioned? Gary Harris. You know, there's options. So I think that's all I got for you, man. Did you have anything else that you wanted to get in here before? I kind of got one other question for you.
No, I think you made a good point just about these being depth improvement moves. These aren't the type of moves that are going to take the team over the top or make them get out of the first round and into the second round, but just fringe guys who can possibly take you from 46 wins to, with their depth and hopefully added consistency off the bench, maybe a few more wins, maybe like 48-ish. But this isn't like the big fish that they're trying to get.
For sure. And that's how this team is really going to take their next jump. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like these guys can be a little bit underappreciated at times and the importance that they have to a team. And, you know, like, Peyton Pritchard's able to step up for the Celtics, or now all of a sudden they went and got Xavier Tillman, and it's like, well, shit, they might need him, you know? Yeah. Or when the Kings obviously had their injuries, and it's like, all right, we're going to try Colby Jones a little bit here. Like, if you had a better option, then you'd potentially feel a little bit better. Same with Chris Duarte, if that was somebody that they hit on more. Say that was Derek Jones Jr. when they wanted it to be, you know? Yeah. Like, that makes a difference, even if it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win another series because of it. Mm-hmm. It could win you one more game.
For sure.
And I think that matters for sure. in this situation. I wish that Kelly Olynyk was still an option here. I love me some Kelly Olynyk at that
back. That's a guy.
I love some Kelly Olynyk, man. But that's all right. The one thing I wanted to ask you, I guess doesn't qualify as overtime because we're still basketball related.
Okay.
First round, some of these series are wrapping up. Mm-hmm. Lakers packing. The Suns already home. What has been the most, what series or multiple have you enjoyed watching the most?
I would say the one that's on right now, the Sixers and Knicks. That to me, yeah, it's hella good. I love the fact that they seem almost like they don't like each other. I love Embiid. He's, all due respect to Jokic, but he's my favorite center in the league. And he, there's just so much into it. He has apparently Bell's palsy, and he's dealing with a lot of like physical issues, his knee. But he's still competing and giving it everything he has. Him and Brunson seem like they're going back and forth a little bit. Like Embiid chicken wing, he threw an elbow at him, and Brunson wasn't feeling it. I like series that have animosity, and there seems like there is definitely animosity in this one. So that's probably one of my favorites. Outside of that, even though the Suns and the Timberwolves wasn't really competitive, I like the dynamic of Ant playing against KD, and he's talking shit to all those guys, letting them know, like, y'all are old. I got this now. So I love that dynamic. I mean, you know I'm a Heat fan, so I'm not really enjoying our series too much.
Oh, yeah, I mean, come on. That is not the most fun. It was 19-12 in the second quarter yesterday. Oh, I was like, what is this game, bro? This is the most Heat game ever. Just ugly as shit, dude.
So I haven't really been enjoying that one too much, but all the big shots that we had the other day with the Pacers and Bucks have been fun, but obviously I wish Giannis and Dame were healthier. So I would say my favorite is the one that's on right now between the Sixers and Knicks.
That's a good one for sure. I think that for me, it's as I kind of look back through them. Oh, it's Clippers Mavs for me.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that one.
I was like, I think there's one we're missing. It's Clippers Mavs. That one is been a great series. And like,
hell yeah.
I kind of think that either a team, I'm like debating if I should say could or will upset OKC.
I think they probably will. Whoever wins this series, I would take over OKC, truthfully.
And I think that they'd have a chance against Denver. Now, I wouldn't bet on that one. You know what I mean? But
well, you're saying, though, that you think Denver is going to beat the Timberwolves.
You're right, actually. I am getting ahead of myself there because I think that is going to be close.
Mm-hmm.
I still probably go Denver, but you're right. Actually, that one is definitely a toss up. I guess I should say, I think that whoever wins Clippers Mavs really could make a run to the finals.
Same. I think if Kawhi ends up being healthy and this works where they just sit him out a little bit in the first round and then he's healthier, deeper in the playoffs, that would be good. But the Mavs look so good, bro. Like, even the fact that they were able to come back, even though they didn't win, from down 31, I think it was, that shit is impressive. I like seeing just the dynamic of Kyrie and Luka. It seems like they finally have the right complementary players around them. PJ mm-hmm. Washington has been great. Derrick Jones Jr., like we talk about, Gafford.
Derrick Literally Clyde, the type of dudes we were talking about today, by the way.
Yeah, so I think they could be serious. And as much as I know you love Boston, I hate to say it, even though I don't really hate to say it, I think whoever comes out of the West is winning.
For real?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't believe in Boston. And this isn't even me hating on your team, none of that. Like,
I don't blame you. Like, the late offense can be tough.
Yes.
I wish I felt better about Tatum. Like, I think that Tatum's elite. I think that he's all NBA second, if not first, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had more faith in, like, I have more faith in Anthony Edwards than Tatum to, like, really, okay, let's close a game out here. You know, Definitely. If it's close, I think there's a chance that Boston just, like, kind of runs away with some of these games.
Mm-hmm.
But close down the stretch, clutch, like, what is that going to look like for him? You know?
I don't know, man. I don't really know.
But I think whoever comes out the West, like, say Denver makes it out, bro, they'd get through Bron and the Lakers. Bron, AD, and the Lakers.
Yeah.
Which, I know that they're a shit show, but, like, that was a fight.
That was.
Even a 4-1. They just seem to have the most competitive sweeps or near sweeps ever.
It's crazy. So nasty. Like, a few years from now, you just look at that series and you're like, okay, Bron, basically, it was a gentleman's sweep. But that series was way more competitive than it looked.
Or two Jamal Murray game winners. Shout out to that dude, by the way. Talk about taking your game to another level. They say, you know, that's why Jamal Murray's not in that. Like, playoff Murray isn't a thing. Playoff Murray is a thing. They didn't put him in that commercial for a reason, bro. But I think that, say Denver makes it all the way, right? They had to take out Lakers that we just talked about. They're going to have to take out Minnesota. Pretty much been the one seed all year. And then they'd have to take out OKC or Clippers, Dallas. Like, the Celtics get through the Heat, right? Probably tomorrow. Hate to break it to you.
That's crazy, but it's true.
Just saying.
That's disappointing.
Don't say it's crazy. You talk a lot of shit, my guy, okay? Cleveland, Orlando, probably been the ugliest series that I've seen in a long time. This shit is gross.
I'm not looking forward to that one.
It is gross.
That's the ultimate NBA TV. Keep that there. We don't
need You're right. It is very NBA TV. But I will say, from Sacramento's perspective, I think there's things to monitor. If Orlando does well, how does that change how they feel about Malik Monk? Or do they feel like they have enough guys? We just got to go get this complimentary, you know? Or from Cleveland, what happens with Donovan Mitchell, who has a good relationship with De'Aaron? You know, does he ask out Evan Mobley? Do they decide that they want to shake things up there? He's somebody that interests me, you know.
Real quick, bro.
Yeah.
Oh my God. A De'Aaron Fox and Donovan Mitchell backcourt might be one of the most athletic backcourts, I don't want to say ever, but that I can remember right now off the top of my head.
I could stomach losing Malik if Donovan Mitchell was, prime example, right?
Donovan, oh my goodness.
It's another level. And, you know, like, I feel like a lot of times I mention guys, potential trade candidates, and it just, like, sounds so pie in the sky. Shit changes really, really fast.
It does.
Never really know. But either one of those teams is getting smacked by the Celtics.
No question.
And then it's probably the Knicks. And it's like, the Knicks will give them a fight. And I think that'd probably go 6, you know? Like, I don't think that's easy. But
low-key, though.
It's nothing like the West. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm very interested to see how much, like, going through a gauntlet compared to an easier route, quote-unquote, affects, like, if Boston makes it to the finals and what that looks like for the West team, you know?
That's a really good point, bro, because that's a lot of wear and tear. I think competitive matchups can drain you a little bit more. But then I also wonder, on the flip side, are you better prepared for that final series if you've, like, gone through Bron, you go through Ant, you go through, like you said, one of OKC, LA, and Dallas, like that. I don't know. That's a great thing to monitor.
And like you said, it definitely can go both ways. I just, you know, last thing I'll say about the Celtics, I really feel for any team that's in a situation where if you don't win the championship, like, it's not just a disappointment, like, it's really a failure.
Yeah.
You know, like, we talked about this King season, like, I'm fine with disappointment. I don't go as far to say failure. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I guess if you lose in the finals, it's competitive. Like, I guess that's disappointment, right? But, like, it really does feel like all or nothing for them. And I just think that's such a shit position to be in. Like, I guess it's not, because it means you're talented. Like, it's good to be the favorites, right? There's a reason you deserve to be the favorites.
Right.
But, God, what a shit spot to be in, you know, at the same time.
It's so much pressure, because you can see, like, there's not really as many – there's not many players who are as young as Tatum, who have as much responsibility as he does, that get the label of, okay, if you don't win a championship, you're not that legit of a star. So it's a lot for him to shoulder, and we'll see if he can live up to it. But I'm like I said, I'm taking whoever comes out of the West.
I don't blame you. We will see. As the postseason goes on, I enjoy the Celtics a little bit more. You know, it still comes back a little bit because Marcus was gone. I was like, this just ain't the same. It comes back a little bit every once in a while, you know. That's like better, though. Like when Tatum threw it down on Caleb Martin, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That was mad, especially because that motherfucker killed him last year in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah. And people somehow thought that I forgot who pushed.
Yeah.
I want to say like Drew pushed Caleb. Caleb like bumped into Tatum. Tatum had a nasty fall, and then somehow it was Caleb's fault. But you could tell like when Tatum dunked that, he was kind of taking that frustration out on him a little bit. And I'm like, fuck, here we go.
Yep. And he had a little smile on his face right after, you know. I guess real quick, is it insane to you that everybody's, not everybody, but a lot of people are saying that Bam shit was dirty? Like, I don't see it at all. They're clearly good friends.
Right.
You know, and they mess around with each other a lot. Like Bam reposting the annual or the anniversary of his block on Tatum in the bubble, you know, and shit like that. And they're back and forth. They clearly are friends. They're both at De'Aaron's wedding, you know. Honestly, so surprised to even open socials and realize it was a whole conversation.
Yeah, Al Horford, he added to it after the game. I forgot who asked him. Yeah, he did. He was like almost alluding to the fact that he thought it was dirty what Bam did. And I think really, if you have the context, like you said, of their friendship, they've been really close since I want to say high school. I don't think Bam would do anything to hurt Tatum. And I think Bam is the type of competitor where he's not looking to do cheap shots just to get ahead. I think he would want to beat a fully healthy Celtics team. And I don't think he's just the type of guy to try to like put his foot under someone so they turn their ankle. I don't see that.
No, I don't think, I didn't see him look down to like try to make sure his feet were there or nothing. Right. Again, like with the context of them being, at least it seems like there's some baseline of friendship right away. I was just like, there's just no way, you know? But like, it was weird. I mean, especially coming from, to be honest, team that had KG on the roster years ago, and that was a long time, but this dude was fucking notorious for no shot is going in the basket after the buzzer.
Yeah.
You know, and I know he's not closing out. He's staying around the rim. Sure, call it different if you want. It's the same shit in my mind. Mm-hmm. And their coach earlier this year literally ran onto the court to contest a jump shot after the buzzer.
Yes.
Like, so what are we talking about? You know, I just don't. That's all I got. That's my rant. I didn't understand. Even as a Celtics guy, I'm like, why are we on Bam's ass right now? This guy did nothing wrong. It's ridiculous. I think Horford added to it, but that's also one of those where I'm like, you know, your teammates, I get it. Like, but he certainly added fuel to the fire.
He did. Like, I get it. It's like you said, it's your teammate, but I'm like, that's bullshit. I don't think he tried to hurt anybody.
I'm the same, but I think that's all I got, man. I think it was good to look at this. I think we can decide. We'll figure it out if we're going to go with either draft or trades next episode, probably trades, or maybe we go in a different direction. But at some point in the offseason, we're going to get through these other two as well. Yeah. Probably in these upcoming episodes, I think we're thinking one a week. Might end up being more, but I think that's the offseason plan as of right now. Obviously, if any sort of news were to happen or anything, then we'd hop on here, but appreciate everybody tuning in. Definitely check out some of my writing, sacktownsports.com, and Hunter's as well at theathletic.com. You got anything else in the works right now, my guy?
Not yet. I'm kind of waiting to see just how the rest of the season plays out. I might potentially do spot coverage wherever they might need me, but for the most part, I'm just waiting to see how things play out this season and who's interested in possibly leaving their teams and different things like that. So I'll be keeping an eye on how the Kings go about this offseason.
Absolutely. Same over here and between us on Kings Pulse as well. So appreciate everybody listening, whether YouTube or on the audio side. Subscriptions are always appreciated. Likes help way more than you know. And be sure to stay tuned in to keep your finger on the pulse of the Sacramento Kings, and you'll hear from us again in the next couple days.